Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Well, our next guest has a remarkable story about what can happen when you have too many men in the media. And rather than have her talk to me about too many men in media, she's been speaking to our friend and frequent contributor, Farai Chidea.
In the early 1970s, protests erupted across the country as American women demanded the same rights and privileges given to men.
We're all here from all over the country to organize for political action that will move us off the sidelines and into the mainstream.
Betty Friedan speaking at the National Women's Political Caucus in July 1971. Women were speaking up and the media took note. On March 16, 1970, Newsweek magazine published a feature on the women's movement. The cover that week read, "Women in Revolt," with a picture of a woman in red silhouette pumping her fist in the air. That same day, 46 of Newsweek's female employees publicly accused the magazine of gender discrimination in hiring and promotion. It was the first class action lawsuit, and our next guest was a part of it. Lynn Povich is the author of The Good Girls Revolt, How the Women of Newsweek Sued Their Bosses and Changed the Workplace. Welcome, Lynn.
Nice to be here.
Yeah. So you start in the present with women who are journalists today. Why did you do that, and what were you hoping to show?
Well, I didn't want this just to be a history that happened 40 years ago about the women's movement at that time. It's not over. Like the civil rights movement, the women's movement hasn't solved anything. And I wanted to use the young women at Newsweek today who were feeling some of the same things we were feeling 40 years earlier. They weren't getting ahead as fast as some of the guys. They weren't getting as good assignments. But because it was post-feminism and supposedly, and we were all equal now, the sex wars are over, they didn't actually know what it was. They didn't see it as discrimination. They just thought it was their fault. So they finally discovered our case when somebody in the library said, you know, 40 years ago, women sued for very similar reasons. And so that opens the book and allows me to tell our story.
Let me just walk through some of the aspects of how you got to this case. How was it initiated? How was it initiated that among a sisterhood of women who were variously described as researchers or checkers, there was this moment of revolt?
Well, at Newsweek, all the women were researchers, the men were reporters and writers, and the women couldn't get out of the category. One of the researchers, Judy Gingold, a Marshall scholar who could not find a job when she came back from England, was having lunch with a lawyer explaining our system to her, and she said, you know, that's illegal. This was 1969. This is after the Civil Rights Act had gone into effect. And she had no idea it was illegal. And she called the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. They said, yes, it's illegal. And she said, well, I think we should just tell the guys. I don't think they know this is illegal. And this woman said, are you crazy? Men won't give up power. People who have power don't give up power. And if you tell them, they'll promote two people, they'll co-opt the movement, and it'll be finished. And you have such a clear case of discrimination, you should sue. And so she's the one who started it all and one by one brought in – I was the fifth person to start to organize.
And when you organized, you had to basically test the waters with different women who had different positions and different agendas. You make a point of saying more than once that the women didn't trust each other necessarily.
Well, I think one of the revelations to us as we organized, because in the end – we bonded. But in the beginning, when there's only one slot for a woman or one slot for an African-American, everyone is competing against each other for that slot. And it was only when we started organizing and realizing that we're actually all in this together one way or another, some are getting paid slightly more, some less, but we're all being discriminated against, that it actually created a sisterhood. And of course, we had the advantage of having the women's movement behind us at that point.
We're talking with Lynn Povich, author of The Good Girls Revolt. I'm Farai Chidea. This is The Takeaway. You have some interesting racial dynamics in your book as well, because the black women on staff who were in this researcher category decided not to join, even though you had Eleanor Holmes Norton. She was a young, pregnant, afroed lawyer who was enthusiastic to take your case. You have one statement where a black researcher said, you know, we had to worry about our families. We had to think about a different social context. Do you think there could have been anything more to do to sort of, you know, work with both race and class to try to bring the black women into the process?
Well, I think, you know, Eleanor Holmes Norton didn't realize that the black women had decided not to join our suit. The women at Newsweek made those decisions before she may have been totally on board as our lawyer. She's convinced she could have convinced these women to join because she was one of the prominent black women who identified both as a black woman and as a feminist. And she felt very strongly that black women should be part of the women's movement. But as she said to me, you know, it was very hard for them to follow a group of middle-class, highly privileged white women whose concerns were sort of about their careers without the whole context of what was going on in the black struggle with their families. And I think the women, the black women at the time, felt far more discrimination as blacks than they did as women. Although later, one of the women said to me, you know, I know that I had an advantage because I was a black woman that also helped me get ahead. And now I think I would understand that it's both as a woman and as a black.
You had a very interesting moment when Katharine Graham, then the head of the Washington Post Company, was alerted about this. What did she say when she was told?
Well, Katharine Graham had been a reporter young in her life and then had retired to raise four children. And then when her husband died, she stepped back in to save the company. And Washington Post Company owned Newsweek. And so when we sued that morning, when we announced our suit, the editor and chairman of Newsweek called her. She was on vacation. And she said, which side am I supposed to be on? And I think it showed the confusion that actually all of us were feeling at the time. You know, we just were – this is a story about women in transition, women who were raised in the 40s and 50s, who came of age in a different time and challenge everything about how we were raised as women, women's roles in the world, and the kind of discrimination we were feeling.
There are much less extreme ways that the news business still affects women. There's even the term news widow, which I'm not sure if you've heard, but it's just basically about a woman who sacrifices herself on the pyre of journalism and has no personal life. And we see things like Sheryl Sandberg of Facebook trying to talk about life-work balance. What are we going to take away from your book?
One thing is obviously that there are still issues, and there are issues to be solved. Women now are everywhere in the middle ranks. You can't turn on television or radio or see women in corporations. They're all managers, senior managers. What you don't see is women at the very top, and that's one of the things Sheryl Sandberg is working. And I think some of the reasons are because work-family issues do affect women more than men, and the corporate culture has not adjusted to more flexible structures so that families, men and women, can do both jobs well. And Sheryl Sandberg thinks there's an ambition issue, that women aren't driven enough to go for those top jobs. I don't think that's true. The people I know are pretty ambitious, but the sacrifices they would have to make to do those jobs, they are not at this point willing to make. I do think women have a confidence gap, that they don't push themselves as forward as we would have hoped by now they would. But the stakes are very high when your own children are involved and your own families are involved. And I really believe the corporate culture has to change.
Well, Lynn Povich, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Lynn Povich is the author of The Good Girls Revolt, How the Women of Newsweek Sued Their Bosses and Changed the Workplace.
Our thanks to Farai and Lynn. This is The Takeaway.